Hello and welcome to the New World Witchery's Folk Magicians Notebook episode for May 2023. These are short monthly episodes that will offer a brief overview of folk magical topics and information that might be useful to you over the coming month. As always, we highly recommend you also pick up a copy of a reputable and reliable almanac for folk magic, such as the Witch's Almanac, Llewellyn's Witch's Datebook, or your local farmer's almanac.
Let's take a look at the moon for May 2023. The moon will be full on Friday, May 5th, and is sometimes known as the flower moon, the corn planting moon, or the hare moon. The new moon will fall on Friday, May 19th, during a transition between Taurus and Gemini. Some notable astrological dates this month. This month begins with a waxing moon in Virgo, making it a good time to set plans that you'll want to make happen over the next month. Virgos are very good at planning. Virgo is also considered a barren sign, meaning it's best for preparing garden beds and flower pots rather than setting things to start growing. The moon goes through Libra and arrives in Scorpio on the 5th, just in time for the full flower moon. This is a time for fruition, fruiting, and flowering, meaning spells that you've set over the previous month should be reaching their peak now. It's also a good time to take flowers for use in magical work, too, such as gathering rose petals to make syrups for love potions. More on that later in this episode. This month, though, there's a bonus, as the full moon is also an eclipse. It's the first lunar eclipse of 2023, and since it's in the sign of Scorpio, this is a good time to either seal up secrets or expose them. So if you've got something you need hidden away, put it into a dark jar and bury it during the eclipse, or spend some time doing divination to learn secrets that might otherwise stay hidden. The moon wanes through Sagittarius and Capricorn over the next week, and you may feel a shift in energies requiring more rest and less social time, or a need to do things that involve depth, whether that's planting potatoes or spending time working with some otherworldly companions. The moon continues to wane through Aquarius and Pisces, so pay attention to dark dreams, ones that may reveal hidden things to you or help you to integrate those shadowy sides of yourself. The moon arrives in Aries on the 16th, however, when you may need to do some work to keep those shadow desires in check lest they become self-destructive. And also do some work to prevent garden pests or harvest fallen foraged materials for spellcraft. The new moon on the 19th is in Taurus / Gemini, which makes it a good time for spiritual nourishment, doing divination for yourself or others, spending time in community, or sharing a hoozle or red meal with some coven mates, and so forth. The moon grows, and you may find more conversations popping up around your magical work or your garden, which means lots of opportunities to learn. The sun also enters Gemini on the 21st, right as the moon shifts into Cancer, meaning more sociability, but also a need to ground and be in your home space, too. It's a good time for nailing down work or putting bindings on your books before loaning them out. The month winds down, shifting into Leo, then Virgo and Libra again, meaning it's time to look back at how your plans for the past month have played out and start making new ones for the month to come. Now we'll take a look at cards, divination, and proverbs for the month. Each month, Lane and I will pull a card for each other, one playing card and one tarot or oracle card. We'll indicate the meanings of those cards in general and read them for the other person specifically as a way to get a sense of how they're read in actual practice.
For Corey's monthly card reading, this time I drew the Six of Hearts. The heart suit immediately tells us this card is about love, emotions, and family. The six in particular representing loyalty, longevity, and stamina. Think of a friendly family dog, loyal till the end. For Corey, this may mean that this month he needs to focus his energies on those he loves. I know his school year is coming to a close. Perhaps this card symbolizes taking a break from work and focusing on his emotional well-being and his family. However, it's important to remember that focusing on the ones you love should also include yourself. If you tend to spread yourself thin, taking time for yourself can be a great benefit to you and your loved ones. But let's not forget the longevity and loyalty part of this card. If you pull the Six of Hearts this month, It could also be the indicator of a start or beginning of something great, something that will last for better or for worse.
This month, I pulled the Emperor from my 5-cent tarot deck by Madame Clara. Normally, the Emperor is a serious-looking man sitting on a stately throne, often carved with Aries symbols such as ram's heads. He's active, a decisive energy, but also the power and authority associated with divine guidance. He can be stern, even authoritarian, but he's also fatherly and wise. On the 5-cent tarot card, he's an emperor penguin wearing a crown, standing atop an old Victrola, which can symbolize the wisdom of tradition and listening to the past. A pair of ram's horns curl beneath his feet, tying into that Aries energy, and he's ready to guide and direct you. In reading this for Lane, I see a desire to tap into that fatherly power, a need to weigh options and think about the lessons of the past. But rather than being trapped in indecision and executive dysfunction, this card demands that she make a clear choice and pursue it without hesitating. The lessons you need to help you make this choice have all happened before, and you bear them inside you. You know what the right pathway is, so it is simply up to you to choose it and begin walking. For our folk divination method of the month, this month we're looking at an old folk practice that I like to refer to as the calling circle. This practice generally involves taking a young child, often at their first birthday, and presenting them with a variety of objects to choose from. Whatever they pick first tells something about their future. For example, here are 3 entries referring to this practice in Harry Middleton Hyatt's Folklore of Adams County, Illinois. On a boy's first birthday, lay him on the floor, and before him put a deck of cards, a bottle, a Bible, and a piece of money. If the deck of cards is selected, he will be a gambler, if the bottle, a drunkard, if the Bible, a preacher, and if the money, a hard worker. Or, the day a boy is a year old, put down before him on the floor a pocketbook, a whiskey bottle, and a deck of cards. If he reaches for the pocketbook, he will be opulent, if for the bottle, a drunkard, and if for the cards, a gambler. Or finally, a boy's future can be discovered on his first birthday by laying him in front of a book, a dollar, and a hat. If he clutches at the book, he'll be a good learner. If the dollar, a miser, and if the hat, a stylish dresser. Here's a version taken from my book, New World Witchery, that uses this concept but allows for anyone to do it, even if you're not currently an infant, which you're likely not since you managed to download a podcast. Have a trusted friend or several gather a group of objects for you. Preferably have them be a number with magical significance to you, such as 7 or 13. Do not let them tell you what the objects are or how to interpret them, but simply let them bring them to a space where you can move around a bit. Draw a circle of space at least 9 feet in diameter using chalk, flour, or something similar. This often works best outside. Sit in the center of the circle and let your friends or friend blindfold you. Then have them place the objects around the perimeter of the circle. When they are done, one friend should stand you up, hold you close, and whisper, "Find your way." You may reply by saying, "I will find my way." Let her spin you around a few times, another opportunity to use magical numbers if you like, spinning 3, 5, 7, 9 times. Then stop and stand for a moment. Collect yourself and breathe in. Extend your hands. Turn in a circle. Wait and see if you feel a pull in any one direction or another. Follow your impulse to go where the pull is strongest. When you think you're close, you can reach down and feel for the object. Whichever object you touched first is the object that called you. Take off the blindfold and examine it. Think about what it means to you. It's fine to discuss the object's meaning with your friends if you like, but it will be most crucial how you interpret its meaning. Does it give you an idea of what comes next for you? Does it open up the possibilities that you hadn't considered? What does it say to you? And what will you need to do to take the next step on your way? Our witch's proverb of the month: a secret kept is your prisoner. Once told, you are its prisoner. A proverb from India. For our folktale this month, we have a tale of magic just bawdy enough for May Day and Beltane. The Tale of the Basin, a folktale from England. There were once two brothers. The one had inherited the father's house and land, the other became a parson, and through his own good management became quite wealthy. The former married a greedy woman whose wasteful ways soon brought them into need, and with time their only hope was to borrow money from the good and thrifty pastor. But they quickly squandered this newfound wealth, and the married brother returned to the good parson requesting additional help. Questioned by the pastor as to the conditions in their household, the husband admitted that a priest, known by the name of Sir John, was often a guest in their home. "I suspect this Sir John may be up to no good," warned the pastor, then outlined a plan to his gullible brother to reveal the true purpose of the priest's visits. Accordingly, the husband took the chamber pot from his own bedroom to the pastor, who spoke a charm over it, and the pot was then returned to its normal place beside the married couple's bed. Announcing that he would be away for some time, the husband took leave of his wife. No sooner had he disappeared from view than the wife sent for Sir John and began to prepare a feast for the two of them. Then, having eaten their fill, they retired to the bedroom. In the middle of the night, the priest arose to make water and picked up the chamber pot with his two hands. But to his alarm, he discovered that some mysterious power held him fast to the basin. "Woman, help me!" he cried to his bed partner. She jumped to his aid, but immediately found herself stuck to him and to the pot as well. Their combined cries awakened the servant girl, who ran stark naked to help her mistress, but she too stuck to the pot. What followed was quite a dance. The three of them spilled onto the street just at daybreak, and one after another different villagers tried to pull them apart, only to become stuck in the procession themselves. Finally, they were approached by the husband and his brother, the parson. The cuckolded husband demanded payment of £100 from Sir John, threatening to cut off the latter's equipment unless he complied. Sir John, valuing his tender bits, agreed to pay the proposed fine. Hearing these vows, the pastor spoke a charm over the basin, and its prisoners found themselves freed. The shamed priest left forthwith for a different country, and as for the husband and wife, from that time onward, they lived together without strife. You've probably heard the saying, "Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive," or some variation of that. In The Tale of the Basin, a story with many variations from a number of sources, including Geoffrey Chaucer's Miller's Tale in his frame narrative collection, The Canterbury Tales, in some versions, the consequences of the deceit and infidelity involves losing one's beard, or suffering minor wounds or slightly larger humiliations, such as being forced to run stark naked through town. Here, we have a problem of marital bliss gone wrong being solved, interestingly enough, with magic done by a rural parson, a religious authority figure akin to a priest, but without church financial support and usually responsible for a very small area. The one who receives comeuppance is another religious figure, a priest also associated with nobility through his title of Sir, indicating knighthood. The parson is not condemned for his knowledge of such magic, nor is anyone suspicious about this ability to enchant what amounts to a portable toilet in order to catch the knight priest and hit the wife with a wandering eye. Additionally, the affair's effects spread to a number of other household members and become not only an embarrassment but a comically raucous parade, a sort of noisy walk of shame. In the end, though, what is remarkable about the story to me is that the punishment fits the crime because the magic works in twisty and unexpected ways. The priest knight is so embarrassed by his actions that he leaves town after paying a hefty sum, albeit at a knife's point, very clearly aimed at his tender bits. And of course, the whole town knows of the affair, but the husband and wife are said to reconcile, living without strife into the future. All because of the equivalent of supernatural superglue on someone's toilet seat. We can sometimes think of magic only in terms of extremes, getting the exact result we envision, or bringing an angry justice raining down onto the heads of those who've done wrong. But magic is often a good bit subtler than that. Sometimes it's not a storm blasting someone with disproportionate vengeance, but instead a chamber pot that leads to a parade of half-naked people through the town and, somehow, a happier marriage. It's good to think about the outcomes we want with magic, even to help shape those outcomes through our mundane actions, too. We should put in the effort to apply for jobs if we do a job spell, and we should talk to the people we want to date if we're working love magic. But we should also remain open to magic working in weird, wonderful, and unexpected ways, too. Not just in terms of the immediate hows, like getting stuck to our enchanted composting toilets, but to see a final outcome entirely different than the one we might have envisioned in the first place. A happy ending often comes at a cost, even a hilarious one involving a parade of shame through the town. Magic is crafty like that.
We'll finish up our notebook entry with a little charm or craft each month to add a practical element to your work. This time, we're telling you how to make rose syrup for love. This recipe is from our upcoming book, Conjuring the Commonplace, a guide to everyday enchantment and junk drawer magic, coming soon from 1000 Volt Press. May is when the roses start to bloom, and if you have a backyard full of roses, then you've also got one of the best known love charms too. For example, a trail of rose petals left from the front door to the bedroom is a relatively clear indication that you want to do more than change the sheets when your beloved arrives. Similarly, you can incorporate roses into love potions and even food to give a little romantic boost to your magic. Rose syrup. For this recipe, you will need 2 to 3 cups of clean rose petals. Make sure not to use any treated with insecticides. 1 cup of sugar and water. Begin by lightly sweating the roses in a small saucepan with a lid over low heat. You'll begin seeing condensation forming on the lid eventually, which is the rose essence you're trying to extract. Before the petals can burn, stir them and add the water, about 1 cup or a bit more if necessary. Bring to a bare simmer and let the rose petals infuse for at least 30 minutes till the flowers are wilted and translucent. Strain off the liquid and discard the solids. Then return the liquid to the pan and add the sugar. Bring to a boil and let boil until the sugar completely dissolves and the mixture reduces a bit. Bottle the rose syrup and keep in the fridge for up to a week. What do you do with rose syrup? Well, it's used in lots of Middle Eastern pastries, so it's a great way to add sweetness and a floral note to something like a slice of pound cake. Serve that to a potential lover with a few rose petals around the plate. Not the cooked ones. Save a couple fresh ones for this. You can even draw sigils and signs into the cake with the syrup, then brush a layer of syrup over them to hide them if you wish. You could also vary the intent by using different colors of rose petals, too. Deeper reds might inspire more passionate love, while yellow petals alone could be used to spark jealousy, or white ones might lead to marriage or a long-term romance. Of course, you can mix and blend the colors as you see fit, and all roses can be used to help with love or romance. You could also use this as a way to sweeten speech. Keep a little bottle in your purse or car, dabbing a drop on your tongue before you need to influence people in some way, like in a job interview or when asking someone to help you move. We hope your magic is coming up roses all month long.
That's it for this entry into your new World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook. Thank you so much for joining us this time around. We hope that this month is full of floral beauty for you, bringing you all sorts of garden delights and other kinds of delights as well, given that it is the Beltane month. If you'd like to send us information or responses or questions about anything in this episode or any other, you can certainly do that at our email addresses, compassandkey@gmail.com or newworldwitcherypodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on the internet at www.newworldwitchery.com, where you can find all of our old podcast episodes, as well as our current podcast episodes, and over 200 articles on North American folk magic. If you want to find us at social media, the best place to track us down is to go to newworldwitchery.com/find-us, where we'll be listing all of our social media accounts, as well as any upcoming appearances, classes, anything else that we might be doing. So that's the best place to find us. If you feel like supporting us, $1 a month or whatever you can afford goes a long way. You can do that at www.patreon.com/newworldwitchery. We greatly appreciate it, and you get some fun little perks and bonuses for joining our Patreon. that will about do it for us this time around. We'll be back again next month with more magic, folklore, and mayhem for you. But until then, thanks for listening. Be well.